Mildred stared out the window of the commissary car. For the first time, she was really glad for the train's excellent soundproofing. She wished she could believe it would be the last. She had been allowed one hearty, loving hug of Jack, and JB one comradely clap on the youth's thin shoulder, gingerly so as to avoid the razors Jack had sewn into his vest. Then Jack had been disarmed at blaster point and led back to his cell, acclaimed, applauded, but treated like a wild animal, perhaps recaptured after a bold escape. The Baron's daughter, still naked, had thrown a fit. The general was unmoved. Hearts and minds or not, she was still just a civilian. If terms were given, if laws were laid down, they flowed from the armored train out, not the other way around. She had still broken through the youth's armed and edgy escort to hug him and plant a fervent kiss on his pale lips before being hustled none too gently away. Jack hadn't seemed to mind that part.
"I can't believe you people."
In the double-paned glass, she saw Mark Helton's brown, Greek god face, furrow in puzzlement over her left shoulder. Outside, a long pole was being raised to the vertical by having the butt end dropped into a hole, freshly dug, while a gang of men pulled on ropes attached to the other end. Slowly, the pole swung upward as its base fell into the hole. The task was complicated by the weight of a heavy square-section crossbeam, which had been nailed to the pole a few feet from its upper end, not to mention the still writhing weight of Corporal Brassard, buck naked and nailed in place by huge spikes through the wrists and feet. Private Mickles hung from an identical crude cross, which had already been erected beside the railroad right-of-way at the Ville's edge.
"Your own people, and you do that to them."
She turned, not so much to look at Mark, although she had to admit, even here and now, that he was mighty easy on the eyes, but because she could no longer bear to watch the scene outside. The young captain's expression was of pained incomprehension. It looked genuine to her.
"It's justice. They abandon comrades in the face of danger. To us, that's a very grave crime."
He let his gaze slip past her out the window, as if he were trying to marshal his thoughts.
"I have to admit, I'm puzzled by your attitude as well, Mildred. It was your friend they left to the mercy of the muties."
"Yeah. And I guess by Deathland standards, I should be out there doing some kind of triumphant dance around the base of those poles."
She went to a table and sat. The officer's commissary was empty but for them. Everybody else was either on duty or outside watching the festivities. After a few moments, Mark joined her, bringing her a mug of steaming tea. She smiled thinly and thanked him in a small voice. He sat down. He didn't feel the need to ask. Over the past few days, he had repeatedly sought her out for conversation. Despite her rebuff of his initial attempt, she had softened and guardedly opened to him. She was by nature a friendly and outgoing person, and desperately aware of being cut off from the friends with whom she'd lived in constant closeness for so many months. She didn't really have anyone else to talk to. The aides were so reserved around her that she suspected they had been warned not to associate with her. Singh, although totally conscientious on duty, and extraordinarily skilled given the paltry educational resources that had been available for her training, was subdued almost to the point of invisibility, except when discussing necessary medical or administrative matters. The comments she had made to Mildred on the day of the cold heart attack had been the only exceptions. Mildred suspected she spent her off-duty hours drinking or drugging herself into unconsciousness, or at least as much as she could without compromising her performance. But it wasn't just loneliness that made her lose her unwillingness to talk to Mark. Captain Mark Anthony Helton was an extraordinary young man, no getting around it. He was the son of the Baron of Mobile, no less. Though his childhood had been pleasant, he had been rigorously trained, mentally and culturally, as well as physically. He actually knew a good deal of history, from Mildred's time and before, and almost as rare, knew something about the history of the lost days of nuclear winter, and the ensuing time since the big war, although his knowledge was of necessity sketchy, since few records had been kept and fewer still attempts had been made to gather and collate them into any kind of coherent account. Even during the brief conversations they'd had, he had displayed an intelligence that seemed both broad and deep, and a quick and flexible understanding. If he had a noticeable fault, it was a painful puppy earnestness. But he was never self-important, and although he seemed to try to hide it, he flashed signs of a keen sense of humor. He radiated an easy, unselfconscious charm. He also reputedly had the courage of a lion. The hard cases of Magog's Sec Force treated him with something like awe. She'd picked that up just from listening to the wounded soldiers talk about him. He had never been known to back down from a fight, and never known to lose. He would have insisted on leading the expedition to free Maria Elena Sanchez had the general not personally ordered him to stand down. He was simply a hero. Mildred knew what they looked like. Mark and her late beloved leader and friend Ryan Carter were miles apart in many ways, but they belonged to the same breed. Of course, it had been Mark who killed Ryan. His orders, anyway. That should have made him Mildred's sworn enemy for life. And maybe it did. Except that whole tragedy, the massacre and enslavement of the traveler's caravan, seemed totally at odds with everything she could see of the character of this dashing and dutiful young officer. She felt compelled to try to understand how the parts fit together. And while maybe it was too convenient a rationalization, she couldn't exactly try to trephine him with a fork, not with her friends held captive as well. She might as well be civil while she was compelled to associate with him. She might even learn something which could help them escape. Besides, to be honest, she was flattered by the attention. Here was a man with movie star looks and Harvard professor brains. From the way women looked at Mark, he could have had his pick. Yet here he was with her.
Mildred, you've already made a sizable contribution to our endeavors.
Yeah, I know.
And there are people aboard this train who are alive only through your efforts. But I feel as though you have certain reservations about us, about what we're doing.
You might say that.
We, the General, has a vision of rebuilding America. Not the way it was before the Megacult. That's too big a project for our lifetimes. But of making a start. We can't end the squalor and suffering, but what we are doing is building toward a day when our descendants can. That's been the General's consuming vision since he found this train in an underground bunker 20 years ago. And for the past 5 years, he's been traveling the surviving rail network, repairing as he went, working to seed little bits, oases, you could call them, of civilization along the way.
So you're saying the end justifies the means?
I don't like where that leads any more than you seem to. It's the ready-made rationalization for any sadistic swine who gets to call himself a baron because he commands enough brutal sect men to beat a starved and captive population into obedience. But it's a large end we're talking about here. Not the selfishness and greed of a dictator, and it's one that won't be achieved by pious hopes and warm words alone. It's a hard task. If we shrink from doing hard deeds when we have to, it will never get done, and that's the simple fact.
Not much enlightenment was to be found. The problem with trying to read tea leaves, she'd always found, was that in the end, all it did was remind her she was drinking boiled weeds.
You have a point. I can't deny that. And it's something to work for.
He got up and tentatively started moving toward her.
That's what I was hoping for. You have a lot to offer us, Mildred. I want you to be able to do so with a clear conscience.
She barely noticed him, looking down in her cup as he moved ever closer.
Well, you've given me a lot to think about, Mark.
And here's something else.
The young captain swept Mildred out of her seat and planted his lips on hers. At first she resisted, but soon found herself yielding. Before totally being swept away, she pulled away from his embrace.
Yes.
He gave her a devilish grin and left the room.